Thank you all for coming and for the invitation to speak. I'm thrilled to be able to tell you a little bit about our work using virtual reality technology to develop ways to communicate with the public about genetic and genomic concepts. Just first to disclose that I do have nothing to disclose, no financial relationships or other conflicts of interest. As Carol mentioned, the work of my group focuses on how to communicate with the general public about genetics and genomics. And for this particular study, what we were interested in doing is figuring out how best to talk with people about the idea of a gene-environment interaction. So this is the idea that the effect of a behavior or an environmental risk factor might depend upon a person's genotype, or that there's an interaction between those two types of risk factors in affecting disease risk. So for example, exercise might have a more protective effect on heart disease for someone who carries a particular genotype than someone who does not carry that genotype. There's actually not a lot known about what US adults understand and know about their inherited genetic susceptibility to common diseases, but what there is suggests that there are substantial research gaps, or substantial knowledge gaps, sorry, in what people understand about their risk. And we also know that statistical interactions or numeric concepts like this are quite difficult for lay individuals to understand. But we think that as genomic research advances, that it's actually going to be quite important to be able to talk with people about gene-environment interactions. So we want to convey not only that having an inherited genetic susceptibility to one of these common complex diseases certainly does not mean that you will get that disease, but also that if you have that inherited genetic risk, it might be more important or even more effective for you to engage in preventive behaviors compared to someone who does not have an inherited risk. In thinking about how to educate people about the idea of a gene-environment interaction, we drew on theory and practice from two different areas, science education and educational psychology, which suggested that an approach called active learning might be more effective in teaching people about these abstract genomic concepts that don't have real-world equivalents and are not things that people can see in their day-to-day life. And this is because the sort of self-driven style of learning that asks learners to construct their own knowledge seems to help them in building mental models of these abstract concepts and might be an effective educational strategy. So we had two research questions for this study. The first was, what is the effect of learning mode, comparing active learning to a more traditional didactic learning approach, on comprehension of the gene-environment interaction concept? And the second was to look at possible mediating mechanisms, and we drew primarily on the dual cognition elaboration likelihood model to suggest possible mediators of this relationship between learning mode and comprehension. As I mentioned at the beginning, we chose to use virtual reality technology as the experimental testing platform for this experiment, and this is for a few different reasons. Virtual reality technology provides some important advantages for an experimenter. The first is that it reduces the trade-off that you often face between internal validity or experimental control and external validity, because you can create very realistic worlds while maintaining tight experimental control over variables. More specifically for my experiment, it also allows you to immerse learners in a metaphor that represents an abstract concept, and I'll show you an example of what I mean by that in a minute. Just a word, a little bit more detail about our independent variable. We were again comparing active learning, which on our operationalization is a very game-like, interactive, self-driven style of learning in which learners are asked to figure out the answers to questions themselves, as compared to a traditional didactic approach, which in our case was delivered by a virtual health educator who you see there on the right. We named her Lucy. Lucy provided both a series of questions and a series of answers, so learners were required to absorb information, but didn't have the same sort of interactive trying to figure out answers themselves. In order to hold content as constant as possible across the two conditions, both were structured around a set of 5 questions, which were presented in the same order, and so the major difference was whether they were given the answers to those questions, as in didactic learning, or they were asked to figure out the answers for themselves, as in active learning. There was a common set of genetic and behavioral risk factors that we talked about for a hypothetical disease outcome which we called gallbladder hyperposia to make it sound very medical. And we developed immersive virtual environments or virtual worlds for both of these learning conditions. Just one more word about the content of the virtual worlds. Both of them were based on a common metaphor, which we call the risk elevator. It's based on the risk ladder graphic that many of you might be familiar with, and is a very straightforward way of talking to people about risk. So the idea is that your risk of disease goes up, the elevator goes up. As your risk of disease goes down, the elevator goes down. The particular gene-environment interaction that we were modeling here was between exercise behavior and genotype. So exercise was more protective for hyperposia for someone who had a risk-increasing genotype. So the elevator went down more with exercise for people with the risk-increasing genotype compared to people with the other genotype. We measured comprehension in three different ways to try to get at different aspects of conceptual understanding. The first measure was one of recall, which is just whether people remember what was presented in the worlds, and that was a 14-item measure. We also developed a measure of transfer, which is whether people can take what they've learned in one context and move it to another context. And that tries to get a little bit at a deeper level of conceptual understanding than recall or retention. And we also included a pair of questions that assessed in an open-ended way what people's mental models of common disease risk were. And so did they begin to incorporate the idea of a statistical interaction between genetic and behavioral risk factors after participating in the learning activities? This was a very straightforward randomized design. We recruited 156 healthy adults between the ages of 18 and 40, so this was a pretty young population. They did not have specialized genetics knowledge, which meant that they did not work in the field of genetics, and they had not taken a genetics course within the last 5 years. They were randomized to complete either the active learning virtual world or the didactic learning virtual world, and also completed pre-test and post-test questionnaires outside of the virtual worlds. As you can see, our participants were about half men and half women. Just over half worked in what we classified as scientific or healthcare occupations, although again, we specifically recruited people who had a genetics background. These were pretty medical and scientific savvy people. And as you can see, they were relatively highly educated, with about 90% having at least some college. And that reflects the pool of the NIH Healthy Volunteers Program. So what I am hoping to do now is show you two clips, and hopefully they will play for us. But first, just to orient you, this is the virtual world for the didactic learning condition. So you see our virtual health educator, Lucy, there on the right, and she will verbally deliver information to participants using a series of static visual aids that were adapted from the active learning world. This, again, is an elevator metaphor. So as she describes how risk factors change different combinations of risk, the elevator that you see there in the middle of the screen goes up and down. Sorry about the volume. I thought we had this one. Okay. So as you can see, there's not a lot for participants to do in this world. They generally stay seated. Most of them look straight ahead. We can track where their eyes are looking. So they look straight ahead at the health educator or at the slides, although they do look around at the beginning. Their attention is squarely focused generally on the center there. This, in contrast, is the active learning world. So what you're seeing here is the beginning of the world when participants step inside the elevator, so they're standing inside our metaphor, and they're given a series of questions that they have to figure out the answer to. And they do this, as you'll see in the world, hopefully, by selecting combinations of genetic and behavioral risk factors, and then looking at how that affects movement of the elevator. So what you see here is the participants stepping into the world, and they'll look around. We gave the elevator glass doors so you could see, have a greater sense of movement while you're in the elevator. They're walking toward the control panel. So they're going to select a combination of genotype risk and exercise risk to answer this question. Then when they hit go, the elevator moves. This is a higher risk condition, so the elevator is moving up. And then the floor on which the elevator stops also reflects the total level of disease risk at that condition. So this is a lot more interactive, as you can see. Participants move around a lot more and are asked to do more thinking while they're in the world. So first, to present the results for our first specific aim, which looks at comprehension by learning mode, comparing active learning and didactic learning, we had hypothesized that comprehension would be higher for active learning compared to didactic learning, largely based on the educational psychology literature. But what we actually found was the reverse. Consistently, comprehension was higher, and this was statistically significantly higher for didactic learning compared to active learning. Change of recall score was about twice as big for didactic learning, as was the change in the mental model score. But the main point that I want to make here is that whether we measured this in an open-ended or closed-ended way, the result was quite consistent that didactic learning was more effective. This is the results for the second specific aim, looking at possible mediators. What you're looking at here are mean scores and standard deviations on 7-point Likert scales based on participant ratings of each of these variables. So these were self-report measures of elaboration, motivation, attention, interest, and so forth. And we had hypothesized that these would be higher for active learning compared to didactic learning. So drawing your attention first to motivation and interest, these were, as we had hypothesized, statistically significantly more highly rated for active learning than didactic learning. People were more motivated and more interested in active learning. But these were not mediators of the relationship between learning mode and comprehension. In contrast, believability, which is shown there in the bottom row highlighted by green text, this is believability of the information, was significantly higher for didactic learning compared to active learning. But again, when we formally tested mediation, believability of the information did not mediate the association between learning mode and comprehension. So I think there is a need for more research to try to tease apart what's going on in the learning process and figure out what are the variables that are actually mediating this association. There are, of course, limitations. The participants were self-referred volunteers and certainly not representative of the general population of young adults in the U.S. The self-report measures of the mediators is something we've been thinking a lot about, and we've tried to develop some objective ways of measuring some of these constructs in virtual reality. The computer generates a lot of information about where people are looking, what they're doing, while they're in the virtual worlds, and you can also incorporate some physiological measures. And so we've been thinking about some non-self-report ways of measuring some of those constructs to see whether it's our measures or what's going on there. And I also wanted to mention, which I think is quite important, that we only assessed comprehension at immediate post-test, right after someone had come out of the world. And it certainly could be the case that learning that results from active learning is more stable over time, that immediately after you complete the world, you remember what the avatar told you, but that fades more quickly. However, our results suggested that didactic learning does improve comprehension of the gene environment concept more than active learning. One intriguing thing that we found in the literature when we went back to try to see what other people had found and whether people had found something consistent was that people do seem to need some base level of knowledge in order for active learning to work. And it might be that the gene environment interaction concept is too new or too unfamiliar for the game-like approach to really work effectively, and that we might need to test hybrid approaches, which combine a short didactic component followed by a more active component. And as I mentioned, I think there's also a need for more research on mediating mechanisms and better understanding how information presentation affects people's understanding of these abstract concepts. And of course, this was a group effort. There were a lot of people involved, both at the National Human Genome Research Institute, as well as our collaborators in the Department of Psychology at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Thanks so much for your attention.
And finally, Connie Kohler will speak. Connie is an associate professor of health behavior at the University of Alabama at Birmingham School of Public Health. She's been conducting research on entertainment education and its impact on health-related behaviors. And she's going to be talking about diffusion of mass media messages. There's more.